Vox Markets is an online community of investors that runs a free mobile and desktop platform that allows you to track news and updates about any UK-listed company, offering RNS push notifications, detailed charts, pricing data, and much more. Find out more at voxmarkets.co.uk/app.
So welcome to the new series of podcasts by Vox Markets. And within this series, we intend to hear from industry leaders who are going to educate the market on their specialist sector. We'll be providing in-depth conversations using experts on their chosen topic, and the podcast series will allow the opportunity for listeners to submit their own questions, which will be asked throughout the interviews. So today, for the first episode of our new series, we have a cobalt expert and industry leader, Roger Murphy, and he's going to be explaining the uses of cobalt and the direction of the sector. So welcome to the podcast, Roger.
Nice to see you, Will.
So throughout the course of this series, I'm going to pretend, let's say, that I don't really know very much about cobalt. I mean, obviously I do know a lot about cobalt, but let's pretend I don't. So why don't you just start by telling us a little bit about your background and then maybe how you got into the cobalt sector?
So I'm a geologist by background, grew up in South Wales, worked for about 5 or 6 years in Africa in the mining industry and in exploration in Southern Africa as well. Spent most of my career in the city for a number of different investment banks, mainly as a salesman, focusing on the mining sector, raising capital for a lot of different companies. I ran sales for a couple of different companies. And about 2 or 3 years ago, I decided that it was time for me to become an entrepreneur. And instead of kind of raising money for other companies, to actually get involved in my own company and seek to, you know, to make a difference and to build a decent size mining company. And, you know, we're focused, as you say, in cobalt exploration in Africa.
So whereabouts in Africa does the majority of cobalt come from?
Well, the majority of the world's cobalt actually comes from the DRC, Democratic Republic of the Congo. You know, around two-thirds of all the world's supply of cobalt comes from the DRC. It's interesting that almost no cobalt comes as a primary product. Nearly every, you know, over 99% of the world's cobalt is a co-product, in other words, it's mined with another metal, or a byproduct of mining other metals. And two-thirds, as I say, of the world's cobalt is mined in the DRC.
Okay, so let's sort of go back to basics. I mean, I said I didn't really know much about it. It's the chemical element and atomic number 27, and that's all I really know about cobalt. What exactly is it? It's a hard, silvery white magnetic metal.
That's right. It's another metal. Every metal is defined, or every element is defined, by the number of protons. 27 tells you that there are 27 protons, and that's how cobalt is different to, say, 26 or 25. And cobalt has got some unusual properties, as every metal has. And some of those properties, as you say, magnetism, but also holding power. It's got significant properties in metallurgy and is used. One of the historic, most important uses was in jet turbine blades, because of the hardness and, you know, alloying with other metals and steel. So like many metals, it's got a variety of different applications. And the one that everybody's focusing on now, of course, is its role in electric batteries and the properties that it has, which allow batteries to hold significant amounts of charge and release that charge progressively to drive either a cell phone, which has been historically where the batteries have been used, or, you know, increasingly in electric vehicles.
And I mean, I do want to move on to the electric batteries and the car industry, but you've mentioned a little bit about why the properties of cobalt are so special, but can it not be replicated? Is there not another metal or material that's similar?
There always are alternatives, but it comes down to what you want. The performance of the jet turbine blade, as an example, historically it's been seen as a strategic metal because of the role it plays in jet turbine in the blades of, and it has, you know, it brings a different set of properties which is difficult to replicate with other metals. And so because of the shortage of supply historically and the concentration of supply from the DRC, companies have tried to thrift and use alternatives, but, you know, you trade off on performance if you substitute away from cobalt.
So why, and forgive my ignorance, but why is the majority of it in the DRC?
It's just one of those freaks of geology, you know, just in the same way that the majority of the world's platinum comes from either South Africa or from Russia. It's just the nature of the rocks that were deposited many billions of years ago, in fact, in the DRC, have a high concentration of cobalt in them. you know, it's a kind of freak of geological nature.
Okay, so what's the process of getting the cobalt out of the ground?
Well, firstly, it depends, you know, well, it's obviously mining. There's a variety of different, you know, the majority of the cobalt that's mined in the DRC has been oxidized. So in the initial, when it's deeper in the ground, the cobalt, which is in a sulfide state, so it'd be some sort of cobalt sulfide along with copper sulfides, is you know, as you're closer to surface, the oxidization process that, you know, from air converts that sulfide into what's called a heterogenite, which is a copper hydroxide, which it's quite complex, but you're breaking up a tight chemical bond in between the cobalt and the sulfide and oxidizing that, and so it's a cobalt oxide. So the majority of the cobalt that's mined in the DRC is a cobalt oxide, and then it would be mined, crushed, concentrated, so you'd use density differences in a process plant, either floating off the lighter material or settling out the denser material, and then putting it through a leaching process, either in the DRC or in many cases, a significant amount of the cobalt is concentrated into a concentrate, as it's called, which would be running sort of maybe somewhere between 10 and 20% cobalt. And then 70 or 80% of it is shipped off to China, and China dominates the world's processing of cobalt. And there it would be in a smelter or leached with some sort of acids to produce cobalt salts, which are used in batteries.
So it sounds like there's quite a long process as well to, you know, to really transform it into the material that we want to be using.
Yeah, and that's true of many metals. You know, maybe, you know, copper, which is mined right throughout the world, there are a number of processes, and, you know, the simple one with copper is you pour acid onto a copper oxide and you end up with copper sulfide, and then you precipitate that using electrolysis. That doesn't really work for cobalt, but, you know, it is quite a complex process.
So is the if the majority of it's based in the DRC, are there a lot of companies, and is the market quite saturated over there for companies mining the cobalt?
No. You know, there are some extremely large mines, but there are only two real dominant producers. They're Glencore, the London listed company, which gives, you know, produces several tens of thousands of, you know, rough numbers. I would think Glencore is probably responsible for 25-ish% of the world's cobalt supply. And then the balance of what comes from the DRC, nearly all of it is mined by the Chinese. We've seen very significant consolidation by the Chinese of listed companies in the DRC. The most recent was Freeport sold its Tenke Fungurume project to China Polymetallic, China Moly. And that was a several billion dollar transaction. Prior to that, Anvil, which was an Australian listed company, was also bought out by Chinese and other investors. So it's a fairly consolidated supply picture, and as I say, significantly dominated by the Chinese.
And do you have any idea of the longevity in terms of how much cobalt is in the ground to be mined? And is there a time frame that you think that they might essentially run out of the metal?
Well, it's true of most metals that it depends on price. You know, there's some at some point, to be absurd about it, there's some points at which it's economic to extract gold from seawater, but the price, you know, would be tens of times the gold price. And of course, that's true of cobalt as well. There's cobalt at surface, which is being explored and processed and mined now, but there'll be cobalt concentrated at depth. And, you know, so it's a matter of how much it costs to extract. So I don't think there is a real resource constraint. There is more, you know, a constraint in terms of the capital cost of building a mine and building a process plant and extracting. I don't think there's a real shortage, you know, and obviously, you know, the DRC is not the simplest country to operate in the world, and that brings constraints for some people as well.
So I understand that there's an election overdue in the Democratic Republic of Congo. How do you think that's going to affect the market moving forward?
Well, okay, everybody, you know, Kabila was due, the election was due, I think, in 2016. Kabila, the incumbent, has indicated he will not stand again. There was a lot of concern that he might try to change the law to allow him to stand for a third term. It looks as if he will not now. So there's an election coming up. I think it's likely late this year or perhaps early next. And, you know, people are positioning to see who the next nominees will be. I think the point to make, though, more broadly, rather than just, you know, the political process, is that Congo is the size of Western Europe, and a lot of the, you know, the instability that people hear about, particularly in the East, which whereas the cobalt and copper is all down in Katanga, which is in the very far south of Congo and contiguous with Zambia. In fact, the mineralization continues into Zambia, and you know, it's over 1,000 kilometers away from the political and the well-known civil strife and war, local wars that have occurred in the east of the country. So, you know, Congo's a massive country. It's the size of Western Europe. There's very little infrastructure, so it's almost impossible to drive from Katanga up to Kinshasa, the capital. People fly. So I think Katanga will be insulated to an extent. There'll be the political turbulence, but, you know, as often elsewhere in Africa, you know, mining and business just carries on.
Yeah, and I guess the geographical location probably benefits the market as a whole.
Yeah, it's, you know, all the infrastructure, the physical infrastructure, which you kind of drive supplies in and move the cobalt out, heads, almost all of it heads south from Katanga down into southern Africa, and some of it goes east to Tanzania, but it doesn't go north into, you know, the rainforest, which is, Kinshasa, the capital, is on the Congo River, 1,000 kilometers north. So, it's the same country, but it's geographically or physical kind of geography means that all the infrastructure connections are to the south and to the east, not into Congo to the north.
And do you go across to Congo quite often?
Yeah, I go from time to time. You know, my role is more kind of managing the company in London, but we have people on the ground. You know, I don't do the geological exploration, although I'm originally a geologist. I'm there every few months.
And you said that, did you say 60% is?
Around 2/3.
Okay, so where is the final third?
Most of the rest of the world's cobalt comes as a byproduct of nickel mining. So roughly 2/3 from the DRC mined with copper. The final third is from a number of projects around the world, mostly nickel, whether it's in nickel laterites in equatorial India, equatorial Asia, or whether it's nickel sulfides mined in Canada or in Russia and other places. Nickel is the dominant product, and the mines are there to mine nickel, but they have small quantities of cobalt. So nickel mines don't go out to mine cobalt. They just produce cobalt as a byproduct of the nickel. But that provides about 1/3 world supply. I should note there are a couple of primary nickel, primary cobalt mines around the world. The one that people may have heard of is in Morocco. But most cobalt sulfides have significant quantities of arsenic within the locked up in the sulfide, and that brings obviously environmental challenges in terms of processing or roasting. And when you roast a nickel sulfide, a cobalt sulfide, you're producing arsenic, and you have to capture that arsenic. Significant environmental challenges. And some of the new generation of cobalt explorers and developers in North America and in Australia will have arsenic locked up within their metallurgy, and that's going to be one of the challenges that they have to overcome in terms of permitting and then processing and treating arsenic and managing it responsibly, because as everybody knows, arsenic is a very poisonous substance.
And you briefly mentioned at the beginning mobile phones, obviously car batteries, electric vehicles, predominantly whole cobalt as well. Surely that is the most exciting part of the sector as well moving forward.
That's right. I mean, there's a global shift away from internal combustion engines with all the pollution that's associated with those towards electric vehicles. We're already seeing that. Tesla is a high-profile example. But the vast majority of electric vehicles or the batteries are being manufactured for smaller cars in China. China leads the world in this. China, by reputation, has some of the most difficult environmental challenges, very polluted cities. So, and you've got a central government which is driving aggressively towards cleaning up the atmosphere. And, electric vehicles which don't pollute are a very important part of that. That's one of the reasons why the Chinese, treat cobalt so importantly. And then, the composition of the battery, there are a number of metals which go into the battery. There's lithium on the one side, but then there's a mixture, typically, the metals that everybody's talking about are a combination of nickel, cobalt, and manganese. And, the mixture between those different metals in the battery you know, there's a continuing trade-off between those different metals. I mean, nickel is about $16,000 a ton. Cobalt, having been up to $90,000 a ton, is, you know, just below 70 at the moment. And manganese would be much lower price. So there's always a cost trade-off. You know, putting more cobalt in makes the battery more expensive, but it increases the stability of the battery. So, you know, a lot of people have got different numbers on how batteries will look, but the common theme is that they will have some cobalt in them.
Yeah, I mean, you briefly mentioned Tesla, and I know that Elon Musk has famously said that he wants to cut the cobalt down to almost nothing in his cars. How is that possible? You say you need three metals within a lithium battery or whatever. How is that possible to cut one out?
Well, you know, what happens is that science kind of evolves and, you know, technology improves, but the historic formulation has been sort of 1-1-1, which is roughly, say, in the battery, one part cobalt, one part nickel, one part manganese. Nickel, you know, the nickel and the manganese are much cheaper than the cobalt. And so, they, you know, over time, companies have been trying to increase the nickel and the manganese at the expense of the cobalt. And, you know, but they bring issues of battery instability. I've seen charts which show that above around 60% nickel and moving, you know, cobalt down below 15-ish percent, you start to have issues of battery instability. Batteries can overheat, and people are aware of, you know, combustion of batteries. So there's always these trade-offs that change over time. And there is an evolution towards lower cobalt that's more planned for the future than it's occurring now, but it's, you know, it's a function of technological change. I mean, the other important thing is to model the rate of movement away from internal combustion engines towards electric vehicles, and everybody has different rates of substitution away, and the, you know, the number of units is a very important part of the calculation of the you know, projections of demand, as well as the volume of cobalt, nickel, and other metals that are in each battery.
So how do you think this is going to play out? Obviously, like you said, the substitution is going to happen over a period of time. Let's face it, I mean, in the next 20, 30 years, we're all going to be driving around in electric cars. So how do you think that the cobalt industry will grow? Surely it's got to grow if the amount of electric vehicles is going to go up.
Absolutely. Right? And some of the numbers are astonishing. You know, I've seen some numbers by some big city type investment banks, which are projecting by 2030 that the size of the cobalt market could be three times. It's around 100 to 110,000 tons a year at the moment, and you know, some of the investment banks are projecting 300,000 tons a year. It's difficult to see where all that cobalt comes from, you know, given particularly how much of it's in the DRC. I think there are so many variables here, and I've just talked about a couple of them. Firstly, you know, how rapidly the substitution away from electric vehicles, internal combustion engines into electrical vehicles occurs. So the number of units, the number of batteries that are that you need, and then, you know, the volume of metal, cobalt, and the different metals. So you can get a different, you know, a variety of outcomes, and I'm not smart enough to know which it will be, but the direction of travel is clear, and that is a movement towards electric vehicles, and those electric, that the batteries will contain cobalt, and the size of the cobalt market will increase significantly.
Surely the scarcity of cobalt is going to hold back the car industry, though, the electric car industry.
I think that is, it's an interesting question, actually. You know, the extent to which, you know, cobalt price this year rose towards about $90,000 a ton. It's come back to, I think, about $65,000-$70,000 at the moment. And, you know, but in the short term, I think, you know, most analysts have got cobalt in a balanced, short term, I mean the next year or two. You know, they've got a reasonably balanced market, because we have seen some increases in supply, particularly from the DRC. But, you know, as we move towards the next decade, 2020 and beyond, people start to see very significant deficits. And it's going to be very interesting to see, you know, how that deficit closes. Price will have to rise. Supply will obviously be incentivized to increase. But there will be, on the offset of that, you know, attempts to kind of reduce the amount of cobalt in batteries, because it's the most expensive component in the battery. So, you know, I'm not sure how it'll play out, but I think the direction of travel, which is increased demand for cobalt, rising price, is pretty clear.
So what are the real fierce topic areas of discussion and debate at the moment within the industry?
I think, you know, the volume of cobalt in a battery and how far the substitution away from cobalt towards nickel and manganese can go without battery stability being compromised and running the risks. You know, no car company, whether it's one of the big global kind of OEMs, wants to have a problem with exploding batteries or cars sitting on the side of the road with a kind of a flame coming out the bonnet or whatever. So I think car companies will be conservative in the rate at which they experiment with technologies where the stability of the battery may be compromised. So I think battery technology, and of course there's always room for some completely new formulation. People talk about kind of batteries dominated by iron and many other things, but I think for the next 10 years it's nickel, manganese, cobalt, NMC as they're called, batteries which will dominate energy storage in cars and other vehicles, and those will contain cobalt. So I think it is an interesting challenge. Supply is going to be an interesting challenge.
Yeah, and I guess what you're saying is even if the cobalt decreases within the combination of the three, it doesn't really matter because the number and the quantity of cars that will be produced is going to be a lot higher. So even if cobalt reduces in size within the battery, the supply and the demand of the cars will be a lot greater.
Well, that's right. I mean, there's the two things offset. I'm sure that there will be progressive attempts to thrift, because it's economically sensible to do so. Cobalt is so much more expensive than the other components of the battery. But as you say, the number of batteries being produced as we cease to use internal combustion engines, I think it's Volvo saying that they will switch to exclusively electric vehicles by sometime in the 2020s. I think those are pretty bold aspirations, and it'd be interesting to see whether they're achievable. But that shows you the direction of travel.
But it is interesting. I mean, you think of an electric vehicle, very sustainable, but actually the three fundamental products that go into the battery essentially be mined as well using fossil fuels. So
yeah, it's interesting.
It's just going round in circles, isn't it?
Well, I guess it depends how responsibly and sustainably the mining occurs. A lot of kind of Western style mining companies now are very responsible about their emissions, handling of their waste materials, and making sure that they don't kind of pollute the environment. They have Western companies are held to high standards of environmentalism these days. I'm aware of mines that have planted in not in cobalt, but mines elsewhere in Africa that are planting millions of trees as they move away from the area they've mined. So I think mining gets a bad rap, and I think mining has done a lot to clean up its act, if you like. But on the other hand, as you need to generate the power from something. So all that's happening with these cars is that instead of generating energy by burning petrol, they are holding energy that's been generated somewhere else from the grid. So the other interesting issues for me is where's all this new energy going to be generated? Everybody's moving away from coal towards green energy. So and we're seeing more and more wind farms and solar farms around all over the planet, and that's where I guess the new generation of power is coming from. Then the power has to be stored, and then passed into these electric vehicles.
It's a fascinating topic, and I absolutely love you can talk about for hours and hours about it, but I'm quite interested why investors should be interested in the sector.
Well, I guess investors who look to the mining sector look for two reasons. One is to play kind of changes in commodity prices, and many commodities are driven by everything's in the end driven by supply and demand. But what's I think different about the electric vehicles and the battery metals, cobalt, nickel, copper to an extent, lithium, of course. Is that you've got not sort of a cyclical change, but you've got a secular change. So there is a longer term significant shift away from internal combustion engines into electric vehicles. And so demand growth should last longer and should be less cyclical, because this is a sort of a generational change that we should see.
So which UK players are in the market at the moment?
Well, the one that is the dominant producer globally, listed producer of cobalt is Glencore, but then Glencore also produces a lot of other commodities. So it's one of the big diversifieds, along with Rio's BHP and Anglo in London. And so it doesn't give a direct exposure into cobalt. And there are a number of companies around the world that are listed that provide some cobalt exposure. There's any number of explorers in Australia and Canada. But in London, I'm not aware of too many that, you know, I mean, there's my own company, African Battery Metals, which we're focused on cobalt, nickel, copper and lithium in Africa, as our name says. But and there are a few other companies that will be mining cobalt as well, but it's not a long list.
And just going back to that, you explore a few different types of metals, but which one are you personally most excited about going into the future?
They're all interesting. You know, I'm not smart enough to know how fast the substitution away from cobalt into nickel will go, but I think nickel plays a very important part. Cobalt is probably most exposed to electric batteries in terms of, you know, people are talking about more than 50% of cobalt demand coming from electric vehicles within some few years. I mean, I guess lithium as well, which is a very important part of the battery. But, you know, lithium supply is more widely distributed around the world. But there are some very interesting nickel lithium projects around as well.
Well, Roger, thank you very much for coming on the podcast today and explaining your, you know, your expertise within the cobalt industry. It is a very exciting industry, and I'm, you know, looking forward to what goes on in the future with the electric car market especially. So thank you very much, Roger.
Thanks.
Vox Markets is an online community of investors that runs a free mobile and desktop platform that allows you to track news and updates about any UK-listed company, offering RNS push notifications, detailed charts, pricing data, and much more. Find out more at voxmarkets.co.uk/app.